The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay, I think you are all eager to know the exam. Arvind is here and he brought the... Can we hand out the exam? Okay. Min. Peter. Joseph. Joseph. Oh, okay. Hui Han. Raymond, Marie Eve, Carrie, Qing Hao, Henry. Jacob, Meng Hee, Jack Ma is not okay. I think I say I'm satisfied with the results. It looks like you all are learning, and I can say it depends on your background, previous background. Some feel it's easier, others have more difficulties. But conceptually, I see that most of you grasped, followed what I've been talking. And I think the average is about 80 to 83. Yeah. Okay. The other topic is on the term paper. The term paper, what I would like to say is topics that's related to the nano and related to nano and nanotransport. It could be some. It could be your research problem. As long as you haven't quite finished everything, okay. The one that you wrote a paper before you submitted as your term paper, that doesn't work. But if you are looking at some topics, and you want to write down the status, the problem, and what you're thinking, how you're solving it, that's fine. And if you don't have such a topic, you can pick up one specific topic that might be of interest on the sense that we covered and search the literature and see what are the problems and what do you can you see. You don't have to solve all the problems. It's a if it's a research, you don't have, say, a short answer. You may not get an answer in short time. But I would like to see whether you can use the knowledge, say, to propose solutions and to certain, to the extent that you can go and say, this is how, where I am on this problem. And I would like to see the report, I don't want to say too long of a report. It should be limited to 15 pages or inclusive. And typewritten, and if you are not sure what you want, whether you think it's the topic you want to write, fate, you can either come to discuss with me, or you send me an email, which is to say a short paragraph, say I want to write on this. What's my comment? I'll be happy to look at it. Okay. Any questions? When's due? I didn't say it. Okay. So the finals week or don't be the finals week?
Friday
is our finals week. What's the? I think the last day of the lecture is December 8th or 9th, right? Well, I have two choices. One is before the final starts. Let's say so that's due that week, end of that week. Which means, say, you may take your preparation for other exams. The other is due in the week, the final day of the exam week. What's the preference? The first one due that week, due before the final. Raise your hand. I do a majority. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I haven't count. I don't count that fast. Okay. 7. 7 by default, I think that's the winner. Okay, so it's due before that. Friday of the week. So it's better, you can start work early. Friday, that's December 10th, I think. If I... Okay, so now let me come back to what I was talking in the last lecture. And I showed at the end of last lecture that there's this general equation, novel equation. And novel equation really describes the... if you have... ensemble, and then we have the very big space, phase space, which have the generalized location and generalized momentum. And then each point in this phase space is one ensemble, one system of the original ensemble you built. And so what we define is let's say those are all the systems in the original ensemble, because each point represents that you have specified the location, the momentum of all the atoms, molecules, or electrons in the system. So you really know the system, everything about the system. You know the location. Of you know the momentum of each atom or molecule or electron. So every point here is one system in the ensemble, and we define the Lambert density of the systems. This is the n particle distribution function. So this n particle distribution function is a function of time. It's a function of the generalized location and momentum, right? So this one, for example, if you have 10 to the 23rd number of atoms in the system, and each atom has 3 translational motion, and then 3 coordinates. So you got a 6 times 10 to the 23rd. That's the number of coordinates you have in this n particle distribution function. And what we are saying is if I had to know the volume of this space, again, this is a huge number, so I just write as n, that's just as a one variable, but what I really mean, like dx, dy, dz, but this is a really the volume of the phase space. So this is the number of systems at this point and in this small volume. right? That's what the n-particle distribution function mean. And then from there, we derive, we gave, I threw on at the OC, this is the Lovell equation that just describe the evolution of the system, which is the Fn dt plus summing up with all these coordinates and ri and time derivative and dfn dri plus the momentum, similar summation, time derivative of momentum, dfn dpi equals zero. So this is a Lovell equation that I wrote down at the end of last lecture. I said this equation determines the evolution of this ensemble, the time evolution of the ensemble. And it's very general, and of course it has a huge number of variables. So the only conceivable possibility is if your computer is powerful enough, you can trace the atomic motion, calculate the atomic position as a function of time, as a function of and the momentum, then you can calculate this distribution function. But most of the time, we don't do that. So from there, from this Lovell equation, we there are generally two theoretical directions. One is to simplify this n-particle distribution function, as in this lecture we'll emphasize the Boltzmann equation. So simplify n-particle distribution function just to one particle distribution function. That's a huge simplification. And this is the Boltzmann equation. And the other approach is this is actually a very nonlinear equation. The other approach is to linearize it, and that's the linear response theory. So if you do molecular dynamics, you really should understand the linear response theory. That's the foundation for a lot of data analysis of the molecular dynamics results. And what I'm going to do focus is for the next few chapters is on the Boltzmann equation. From Boltzmann equation, we can derive all the classical laws, the Newton shear stress law, Fourier law, Ohm's law, and although I said this from n particle to one particle distribution function is a huge simplification, but it's still very useful. The point, just one point I want to make is not Boltzmann equation, although we use a lot, but it's not just universal. It still has its limitations. So how we go from here to the Boltzmann equation? And the Boltzmann equation is rather than dealing with this n-particle distribution function, we deal with one-particle distribution function. So here, in one system, okay, in one system, we have many capital N number of particles. So the Boltzmann equation say rather than looking at the specifying the space and the coordinates of all these particles, I'm just going to specify one particle. So I say any arbitrary particle, and this is the one particle distribution function. And it's a function of time, and this specific particle, the location, and momentum. I will, at the end, just drop that one and just say this is the time, location, and momentum. And you can get this one particle distribution function from the n particle distribution function mathematically. Okay, so derived from Lovell equation to the Boltzmann equation, actually there are books written on it. A lot of people worked on how you can start from this very general Lovell equation to derive the one particle distribution function, and they you can this one particle distribution function is really an average of the n particle distribution function, f n particle distribution function, and over from particle 2 to particle 3 and to particle n. So that's the location, and you do the same averaging for the momentum from particle 2 to particle n. So you integrate over all the other particle momentum space, and then you do you what's left is only one variable. It's only the specific particle location and momentum, right? So that's a mathematical idea. So if you can do this integration, and there is a normalization factor. Typically, if it's an n particle, so what you have is a. I forgot the factor here. It's which one is on the denominator? Which one? I think it's the n cap factorial n minus one factorial. But anyway, that's the mathematical idea. So it's more very similar to the problem of turbulence modeling. You really start with say Navier-Stokes equation, and you establish a fluctuation type of and then you do your closure problem. This is a similar problem, and at the end, what you get is the one particle distribution function. The governing equation is similar to Lovell. Now I don't carry that one. You get the Boltzmann equation. I carry, so this is df dt. And now I only have one term, so it's dr dt. And the gradient of df dr is really the gradient of f with respect to r. So I put a gradient term because here, f is a function of both r and p. So now this gradient is with respect to r. It's not with respect to p. Right? You have two variables. And the second term is dp dt. That's the, if you look at Lovell equation, dp pi. Now I'm no longer doing the components. I just write a vector form. And then this is the gradient with respect to the variable p of f. Okay, so all these three terms are really have one-to-one correspondence to what you have in the Lovell equation. But the rest is a difference. In this one particle distribution function, when we derive the Lovell equation, the right-hand side is zero. The reason is this each particle is one system in the phase space lower that big phase space there. Each particle is one system of the ensemble. And those system initially the system are not the same. So the time evolution of these particles, they never cross their paths. Okay, if you think about the fluid mechanics, streamline, these two particles never cross to each other. So that's why you get a zero there in the Lovell equation. But when I deal with do all this simplification, it's just like, again, if you mechanical engineer deal with the fluid mechanics, you have to close your shear stress. So you introduce this turbulence eddy model, Planck model, to close your problem. And this is the same thing. When I only do the one particle, I start to get interaction because the inside the system, the particle can and the particle can interact. They can collide with each other, and during that collision, you can a particle with a momentum p collide with another particle. Then they can change the particle to other different momentum. So there's interaction term when we deal with one particle. And that interaction term is very complicated, but they should have the units as the same as time derivative. This is df dt, is the time rate of change. So I just say, this doesn't mean a derivative. I just say this term, the interaction term, which I put a subscript c here, should have a unit of time. That's a scattering term. Okay? So this term is the scattering term. And so what holds the k is the left-hand side is similar to Lovo equation. It's the here dr dt is just the particle velocity, right? Because r is the location of the particle, dr dt is the particle velocity, and the momentum dt, what is that? Rate of momentum change. Force. So that's just the force on the particle. So the left-hand side is pretty nice. Okay? And the right-hand side, this scattering term holds really all the secret, the case, the interaction, the collision between the particles. So if you think about the energy conversion, it's really this term. That term is more like on the transport. This term is the collision. You think about how you can convert the light energy into the energy of the electrons or into the energy of photons absorb. That's a collision term. And this term here is all lumped into this, just a very simple here, I say it's a collision. So I want to spend a little bit of time. This collision is very complex, but I want to just give you to see. They give a very two-particle collision. That's the simplest case, right? You can have three particles. If you think about the gas molecule in this room, you may have that chance three particles comes together to collide with each other. But most likely you have two particles, right? Because the chance of three particles coming together is much less than the two particles collide. So let's do this. So-called binary collision, two-particle collision, how we should deal with it. I have two particles. These particles could be electrons, could be photons, could be molecules. So this initially, this particle has a momentum. So momentum, I write down a v vector, k. Okay? And this particle has a momentum k prime. Okay? And if they are at the same point, classically, if I just don't consider very long-range interaction, I say this very small particle, and they when they collide, when they overlap with each other. So if I look at the volume of this particle, so they will then change their interaction. Due to that collision, they will change the direction, right? So you will have the k prime will become k1 prime, and k will become k1. So at the location r, after before collision is kk prime, after collision is k1 prime. And the k1, yeah. Right? And so what's the chance of such a collision to happen? How we calculate how fast this collision happens? And that collision process itself, typically what you do is go back to quantum mechanics. Okay? Normally we say before collision, we forget about their interaction. After collision, we forget about their interaction. It's only in that moment of their collision there is interaction. So we implicitly imply that this rate of collision is not that frequent. Okay? And when we do this collision, So you go to do quantum mechanics, and it's intrinsically a time-dependent problem, right? Before collision, after collision. We didn't go to solve this time-dependent quantum mechanical problems. So you can say, I'm going to throw you at the results. What's the result if you do that? And the idea is, as I said, we assume that before the collision, the two particles don't interact with each other. And I have, if they don't interact, I have the steady state solution. Schrodinger for each particle or for two particles, I have the steady state solution. So originally, say if I don't consider the interaction, I have the solution, steady state solution. And each particle has a solution, or if I take these two particles together, I have a joint solution. Okay? Steady state. If I load the location, the energy confinement, I know the solution. So let me just say K1, K prime. These two, their joint initial solution for wave function is psi I. Okay, suppose I solve the equation, quantum mechanics, steady state problems. And then, say, after they collide, again, say, I have a solution. It's during the collision I don't know the solution. Because before, after, they are far apart, they don't do interaction. It's just like isolated atoms there, or molecules. So I have another solution that's after. So I have K1 prime, and this is the after. So suppose I know the initial and the final wave functions from quantum mechanics, and this is those solutions are obtained by the original, Schrodinger equation, which can be written as H0 psi equals H0 psi equals E psi. That's the original Schrodinger equation, right? So H0 is the Hamiltonian, is P squared 2m, and this is the operator, P plus the potential. And remember, the momentum operator is IH bar delta square plus U. So what I have is minus 2m H bar square delta square plus U. So this is the Schrodinger equation. And this U is just the potential energy that there's no interaction. Now, so it's a general discussion, right? We're not solving any specific problem. Now I have the interaction happen. During this interaction happen, what does that mean is these two potentials now overlapping each other, that will create a deviation to the original potential, right? So, or more generally, deviation not only to potential energy could also have, perturbation to the kinetic energy. So, generally, there is a perturbation term due to interaction. If we treat this interaction, perturbation to H is H prime. So, what I say is this interaction, this H is also called Hamiltonian. If I didn't discuss that in the Schrodinger equation. So now I get this small perturbation to the H0, and my really interaction Hamiltonian is the steady state part plus this interaction part, small perturbation. I assume that interaction is small. Then you go to solve the Schrodinger equation. And you solve the Schrodinger equation using the so-called perturbation method. Okay, because this one is small compared to original. So use the original solution to build your perturbed solution. And from there, you can get the rate of that collision. And let me give you this rate of the collision. So from here, we get a time-dependent perturbation theory from this. So time-dependent perturbation solution to the Schrodinger equation, we get the rate of this change from the initial state to the final state. And this is so the initially the momentum is k, and k prime, and to the final is k1 and k1 prime, right? And this rate then is given by the general expression here, the so-called Fermi's golden rule. So what I have here is the h bar 2 pi, and the term as an integral term here is psi f complex conjugate h prime, that's the perturbation, and psi I dr. That's the over the whole volume, and this is a square. So that's the and then the delta function. Delta is E minus EF minus EI. The F is the final energy of the system. I represent the initial energy of the system. And this is called the Fermi's golden rule. And this this bracket term, not the square, is from the initial to final. I use m. It's really you can say if you have different possibility of final states, it's a matrix element. So this is a scattering matrix. Okay. So the point is, if you know the interaction Hamiltonian, the interaction during this collision, how much perturbation to the energy, either kinetic or potential. And then you know the initial final wave function, then you can go to calculate the scattering matrix. And from this scattering matrix, you know the rate of going from one state, the initial states, to the final states. Okay?
Huh?
W is the rate. Okay. So this gives us the rate for this collision to happen. And you can see here what this means. The final energy, initial energy. So if I have two particles, the initial energy is the total energy of these two particles. The final energy is the total energy of those two particles. So what is just this delta function? Just to say the energy must be conserved before and after, right? Right? Delta. This delta function means it's zero if they are different, and it's one if they are the same. Okay. So we have the rate. And now, with this rate, if you know this rate, then you can go to write the, if I count all those collision possibilities. And what this collision here, the scattering term, is just to say, because here, the distribution function, I'm looking at point r of those particles that has a momentum p. Right? So, because of collision, and this particle, if this particle P collide, or you can think of P as a K, because K is HK, P is HK, H bar K, right? And P quantum mechanical H bar K, or you can think this as a P as mv. You can do use different symbols. Now, so here represent the rate of change of the particle at location I with that momentum p. And if this, there are two particle collide happens, if the p collide to other momentum p prime, p1, right? If p to p1 is lost, so the number of particles is reduced. But the reverse can also happen. I could have some from other states p1 prime and actually collide the particle into the state p, right? There are always two competing processes. One is collide out, the other is collide in. And this one really means the scan, the let rate of coming in to that specific location, specific momentum. So this is the let rate. So I have to really sum up all the possibilities. So one possibility is if I have, this is from k, k prime to k1, k1 prime. So, and they originally, I have to see how many particles are there. How many particles have the at the momentum k, or wave vector k. And how many particles is represented by this function f, because that f, one particle distribution function, means how many particles at this time, at this location, have that momentum, right? So how many particles having that wave vector at that location r? I'm dropping the same r. I'm writing this all as the same r. I'm assuming the particle is very small, so the collision happen at the same point. And then, how many particles also have k prime, right? So those products, they just say what's the density of the particle of the two particles there. And then this rate is the let rate goes out, right? The let rate goes out, and then reverse the let rate goes in. So I have to mask the reverse process is from momentum k1, the goes out is negative, so the goes in should be plus. So here is a negative, and the reverse is from k1, k1 prime to scatter to k and k prime. So the reverse, and turns out I'm not going to, because if I write every term, it's going to be a lot of writing. It turns out that the reverse, this factor is the same. That's the detailed balance we said. Chapter 5, we discussed the detailed balance. So I can actually pull this out of the product, and I use the same factor. And because there's a negative sign, so I write this as a negative. And then, but this start point is this at k1, and then at k1 prime. So this is the let rate of increasing the population for particles with the momentum k. So this is the let rate of increase. So this is a df, dt, say, to increase the population of, I write now, I'm not using p, I'm using k, but you can convert back to p if you want. Okay? But then you see, I have one other problem I have not considered. There could be many particles with the momentum k prime, k1 prime. Right? I have the whole box. all the possibility. This particle can collide, have possibility to collide with all other particles. And this function on the left, the function on the left is only for specific wave vector or specific momentum. But suddenly I got a three extra possible momentum, right? I have to sum up all that possibility. So what I have? I have a line summation because each one has three components. If I just deal with a single atom, they're more translational. If I do an atom molecule that also has rotational, I got more because I have to sum up all those other possibilities. So you got a triple line summation there, which I'm not going to write down. Line summation. Or you do converter summation. If you sum wave vector, you can convert it into integration over wave vector, right? Sum over wave vector k can be converted into 2 pi cubic integration over that wave vector. That's what we do in for all the possible states. So this one could be actually written as a line integration. Integrate line times, but they integrate over K1 prime. So you got the line integration with the normalization factor, so this will be 2 pi to the line's power. So here in the front, what I have is really 2 pi 1 line's power. So that's for just a 2-particle scattering term, 2-particle interaction. I count all the possibility of this one particle scatter with all the other particles in the system at that point. And now if you put this 2-particle collision as your only source of scattering, you put it here, that's your Boltzmann equation. Okay? So you put this here into here, I have now Boltzmann equation. You can say in the Boltzmann equation, what variables you have. This k I did not integrate. I integrated over all other k, so that's a definitive integral, right? This definitive integral means the left-hand side, the right-hand side, the only variable here is k. Of course, I didn't write down r. R is implicitly also included. So, and the left-hand side is also only r and k. So I have an equation that really, on the left-hand side is differential, on the right-hand side is integral. The integral is integration over all phase space, the momentum. And differential is space and momentum. And if you're good enough, you can solve it. Okay? Solve for the distribution F at every point R has every possible momentum P or K. Not many people. There are not many people good enough on this, okay?
What does that mean? Has it been solved or not?
Huh?
Has it been solved or not?
There are only very few solutions that people, so for this integral differential Boltzmann equation, only very few solutions people even try to solve this equation iteratively. Because you have to, what is it that is this function, this is a one particle function, distribution function, is a general function of different momentum. So although you are considering the momentum, let's say 1 meter per second, that's the particle you're considering at this moment, you want to solve. But suppose your general solution should know all the particles have velocity from zero to infinite. That's a general distribution function. So you have to substitute that into that general function to other one, and calculate this rate and satisfy both sides of the equation. So you can, in theory, you can do it iteratively. And in practice, I think probably only in fluid mechanics people have done it. Some people in electrical engineering have done it in rough approximate way, tried, but it's not exact. So the Boltzmann equation is most of the time it's impossible to do it exact. And so if it's not possible to do exact, then you have to approximate it. That's what people do. Most of the time, people don't do the exact collision term, and they will simplify it. And that simplification will really open your eye, because it's just too simple. And this simplification is, I can't quite do it in the rigorous way. I will just do it in an approximate way. So that just eliminated the whole integral there. And this is the so-called relaxation time approximation. And here is the relaxation time. Okay? This is the relaxation time. And if you go to look at in electrical engineering, people will call the relaxation time approximation. And in fluid mechanics, the equation you substitute this back into here is called the Krug equation. So they don't call it even Boltzmann equation in fluid mechanics. They will call it Krug equation. So if you do it in approximate way, what I have here is V dot R F dot F dot P equals F minus F0 divided by tau. And this, some people call it the Boltzmann equation. But as I said, say in verified gas dynamics, this will be called the Krug equation. Okay. And but as I said, this term really holding the key to the interaction to the energy conversion. And even though, say, to solve for F, you need iteratively to do the iteration to really solve for, because you want a consistent left-hand side of the equation, right-hand side of the equation. So solving that is difficult. But people have tried various ways, at least to get from that general equation to get this relaxation time. Okay, people have used various approximation to start from here to get the relaxation time by going back to look at what's the scattering say matrix, calculate scattering matrix, and then often they will approximate this F by the equilibrium distribution. So with that, they will calculate the rate. So it's not the exact distribution function, but the approximate, and then calculate the relaxation time. And so let me spend some time let's look again to this scatter matrix and say what general rules in this interaction. I said here, this delta function means just the energy mass conserved. So even though we're not going to do a lot of this scattering relaxation time evaluation, but what are the general rules of the interaction? And of course, I have EF equals EI. That's out of my scattering matrix. And if I just say EF minus EI, what I also mean, because of the F final states has the vector E is the function of vector wave vector, so E as a function of wave vector, which is the final one, is a K1, And the second particle is K K prime. No, K one prime, and should equal to K. And a little bit, so 1 is my final, okay, prime is another particle. So 1 is my final, prime is my other particle. So here is K prime. So that's just to say the energy conservation, right? Before and after the collision, the energy must conserve. And the other rule is hidden into this scattering term, okay? That's the momentum conservation rule. If you go to do this integration, very often you'll find you have to satisfy the momentum that's embedded in this wave function, say, scattering matrix. And if you do this, generally you'll find that you have to find that the momentum is conserved. So what that means is K plus K1 prime and should equal to K plus K prime. But there is one complication in doing this. If you think about in electrons, photons, we have this is the wave vector, this is the energy, and let's say I draw a photon dispersion, right? Energy wave vector relation. So if your K is here, K1, K is a K, and this is a K prime, you can say K plus K prime will be going out of the first Brillouin zone, right? Go out, because these two sums will be somewhere here. It's outside this region. And we said before, outside this region is meaningless, right? So how to satisfy that? And it's satisfied by just whatever possibly the zone boundary wave vector G here. This is a G, that's the reciprocal lattice vector. So that's it could be zero, or it could be any value in this dispersion relation. That's how it will satisfy the momentum conservation. And those are the two general rules. And let me give you a few examples. If you want to read, in addition to chapter 6, you should read the first few sections of chapter 8. The particular first section, I discuss a lot on the electron photon scattering, how you can actually evaluate this scattering, and you'll see this rules will appear naturally. So let's think about the absorption of photon. And in theory, you can go to do that scattering, but let's just say, look at the physics. So if I have a semiconductor, I draw a direct gap semiconductor. This is the valence band. This is the conduction band. Okay, this is the wave vector, and this is the energy. So a light semiconductor absorbs a light, a photon. So the energy in that case is originally, so you have electron here in the valence band, and you will interact with a photon, so you have an electron here, and then a photon comes in, create a perturbation interaction potential. And what it does is, at the end, this will excite this electron from here to here. I have to draw this. Because that's allowed. This is what's the original solution for the semiconductor. That's what's allowable final energy states of the electron. Right? So this is a EI. You can think this is a EI. This is EF. That's your electron. Because once it absorbed, the electron absorbed that photon. Photon disappear. Okay. So what will happen? The energy conservation will tell me EF equals EI plus H nu. This is the photon energy. Right? Then I can go to think about momentum conservation. The momentum conservation will give me, so here is the original is a KI. And then plus the momentum of the photon, what's the momentum of photon? This is energy, and H lambda is momentum of photon, and equals KF. Right? That's the final wave vector. So the final wave vector is KF here. But you see, I draw a pretty much vertical line. Right? And the reason is the photon wave vector, you have a visible light comes in. What's the wavelength visible light? 0.5 micron. Here, if you go to the boundary, this is a pi over A. Remember the pi, the boundary, right? The A is about is the distance between the atoms. What is A? Order of magnitude. Angstroms, right? 5 angstrom, 1 angstrom, few angstroms. Few angstroms versus microns. Huge, this is a very small number. So although you see you observe momentum rule, the momentum of photon is too small. So it doesn't change much momentum, so it's pretty much a vertical line. Now if I give you a silicon as an example. So silicon, the conduction band, and so this is the conduction band, this is the valence band, and it turns out they don't overlap, the minimum, this minimum and this minimum do not overlap. The valence band, the maximum, and conduction band, the minimum, doesn't overlap. So to have this absorption to happen, you can see going from here to here, electron has to, if we want to go put the electron from this point, this is the wave vector. One photon doesn't do the work. Photon have enough energy. Okay, you can have light comes in, but the photon doesn't have momentum enough. They only can put it here. Putting here is not possible. There's no allowable energy for electron here. Right? So what happened? You will have to have the chance of having some additional wave vector. So you will have to involve some photon. So a photon will give you the wave vector. Photon has much smaller energy. So a light comes in, he interacts with that electron, and if you also have locally at the point photon available, that will give you the additional wave vector. So if you look at the absorption of semiconductor as a function of frequency, okay, this is the absorption coefficient, and for direct one, it's very sharp at the band gap, EG. This difference here is the band gap, EG. You'll find out this is very sharp, but for indirect one here, it's if this is the EG, it's not as sharp as the near the band gap region. That's because essentially you need a photon, that chance is smaller. Okay, so difference between, but all this actually can be treated by this scattering integrals. You go and calculate scattering matrix, and then you can do your integration and find out in theory. So that's the, and so the people have studied various kind of scattering process and get the different relaxation time for electrons, for photons, different transport process. And if you look at the electron transport, the interaction, what happens is between electron and electron is one reason scattering, and the other is between electron and photon. And the third is between electron and the impurity. So for each of the scattering process, there are expressions for the relaxation time. And also depends on if electron interact with acoustic photon, optical photon, all these people have looked at it. And so electron scattering. You can scatter with other electrons. You can scatter with photons. Or you can scatter with the impurities in the atom, in the crystal. Or if you look at the photon scattering,